and dunks by Smith. And no rebounds, if that's the case, we put Oakley and Mace in your face. We draw charges and we send picks. We are New York. We are the New York Knicks. Say, go New York, go New York, go. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of West Coast Knicks Fan. Really excited about this week. So we're here with ESPN's Jared Zwirling. Really excited to have him. Another great win. It's just starting to become par for the course for these Knicks.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. What did you see today that you liked? I mean, it was an uglier game. What did you see that you liked from the Knicks tonight?
Well, the first thing is Tyson Chandler's defense on Roy Hibbert and Tyson Chandler. You know, the Rays have to put it here, and it does a great job on the best centers from Dwight Howard, Andrew Bynum, today, and Roy Hibbert. Really, just really contesting his shots well, forcing him off balance, taking some hard kind of hook shots. So that really, that anchor in the middle really, I think, kind of broke apart the Pacers' offense a bit. And, you know, even Rasheed Wallace and Carmelo Anthony's defense on Hibbert and also on guys like David West, Tyler Hansbrough. I think today their interior defense was really, really good. You know, I think just the swatting shots, testing shots, and, you know, overall, Knicks defense has been awesome. I mean, they're the best defense in the league. They're rotating really well. They're really communicating from Tyson Chandler to Rasheed Wallace off the bench to the point guard, Renfell and Jason Kidd. It's a collective effort. They're really playing hard. They're all very focused. I was talking to Chris Copeland before the game today. He said, you know, this past week was our first road trip, and there were no distractions. Guys are just very focused, very zoned in on the game. Nothing else really matters right now. And I think it just shows defensively, because I think that the best way to play defensively is to really be focused.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Melo's defense. I mean, do you think he's getting tired? I mean, at some point, all this banging, I feel like it's going to have an effect. I mean, David West at the beginning of the game was just throwing him around under there.
Yeah, a little bit. I think, you know, David West is a great power forward, and it is an adjustment for Melo. But, you know, you go back to last season, Melo was actually the best post defender in the league. So, you know, all this talk about Melo's, you know, refocused defense, a bit overhyped, a bit overrated. You know, he's always been a good defender, and I think that, you know, I think that the biggest thing that he's improved on, and we'll see for the course of the season, is probably more of a consistency. You know, I think Melo, when he put effort into defense, he really, really played very good defense. And I think this season, what we've already seen is a more consistent Melo on both sides of the court.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was going to ask you, I mean, you know, I watch the games. Are you watching the games from inside the arena? Where are you watching the games?
I'm watching them from inside the arena, from the press box.
So, I mean, do you sort of focus in on, because, you know, I've only seen a couple of lapses from Melo, and that was only because they replayed him. I mean, are you seeing him locked in on every play?
I'm seeing absolutely. I was talking to, I'm doing a story actually this week. I was talking to Carmelo Anthony's trainer, Don Ravine, who has trained some of the best players in the league, one-on-one, Kevin Durant, Dwight Howard, Kobe Bryant, you name it. And this past summer, he worked with Carmelo. He's actually been working with Carmelo for the last off season. And he also worked with J.R. Smith and Kevin Durant and Blake Griffin this offseason. And the biggest thing that Edon really wanted to stress with Carmelo was to just relax a little bit more. You know, Carmelo came into New York under the bright lights, obviously a lot of pressure. You know, it got them a little bit. You know, he sort of felt like this internal frustration. And, you know, if you talk to any sports psychologist, they tell you that the reason why the best athletes are the best is that they have an inner calm. It could be the first quarter or game 7, 2 seconds ago, the team down by 2. They feel the same way. They don't get rattled. And there were times that Melo, you know, had put a lot of on his shoulders last season. And, you know, I think now he's coming in a little more relaxed. He's relaxed with the media. He's relaxed with the guys. He feels confident with his teammates. And with J.R. Smith, you know, he admitted a couple days ago that he was partying too much. And it really goes back to his work with Edon Ravine. Edon really wanted to focus more on bringing consistency to his workout routine, not taking days off, really making basketball his first priority. He told J.R. Smith, look, you know, you have to form your career where some people are saying that, oh, he's only potential, he's only hype. And Edon told J.R., look, man, I don't want to hear that ever again. I want to hear that you are one of the best players in the league, and I want to see you even on the All-Star team. And JR said, "Get thrown away, he's playing. He could be on the All-Star team."
Yeah, so this.
Now it's a different focus.
So this guy is like a guru, this guy. I don't think any of the regular fans have ever heard of this guy.
Man, I know everything about the game, man. Every in and out, you name it. I mean, I know all the trainers, all the medical people. I mean, Udon is a legend.
Yeah.
If you're a basketball head, someone who's covered the game or has been around players, you know who Udon is.
I mean, it's just interesting to hear you talk about him, specifically working with those two guys. I mean, I think it's very clear at this point, 8 games in, that this isn't a fluke with both Melo and JR playing defense and just making sounder decisions.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, I think it's just they're in a better situation, especially with the guys that are around them. They know that this is their best chance to do something really special. You talk to all the guys in the team, they know that their only hurdle is just staying healthy. They really believe in themselves. They believe in their depth. Obviously, Amari still hasn't returned yet. Iman Shumpert still maybe a month or two away. So they really like the potential, and they just feel like let's just keep playing our game. Let's not change depending on the opponent. Let's set the tempo early. Let's show them who's boss. And they, like I said, they just feel like everything is clicking right now. Obviously, there's always a little improvement here and there, a little things you want to tweak and. That's obviously a given, but, as far as their hot start, I mean, I think they've already proven that they are one of the legit teams, one of the top 3 or 4 teams in the league right now, and I really fully believe that they're going to be competing for maybe the second seed in the East outside of Miami Heat if they really just stay healthy. That's what the players keep thinking too.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as a fan, I think all of us are starting to raise our expectations. I think mine at the beginning of the year was like high 40s, maybe 50 wins, maybe a 4 seed, maybe a 5 seed. I think that's changed now. I mean, I think from the outside, at least, every Knicks fan who's watching consistently and, knows the Knicks, I mean, are we right to raise that expectation? Are we now, do you feel safe now being like, this is absolutely the number 2 seed in the East, probably?
Yeah, I mean, look at their record. And they're dominating a lot of stat categories, offensively and defensively. You had one of the best players in the league in Carmelo Anthony, who is now bringing a consistency on both sides of the court. You have a brand new backcourt. Utilizing 2 point guards, which is very unique. Everyone I talked to, from former players like John Starks to current players, they've all really think it's a great thing that the Knicks are actually running that 2 point guard lineup.
How good is Raymond Felton?
Well, he was good in New York 2 years ago. 2010, 2011, he
played
like an all-star, basically.
I mean, to me, he looks like an all-star. I mean, look, his shooting percent, he had a bad shooting night tonight, but he just has that same, like Melo and JR. It seems like all these guys have a ridiculous level of confidence right now.
Yeah, Raymond's playing great. He looks like a running back out there. The way that he, when he fires the open lane, he puts the ball on the court really, really strong. He gets his body into the center. He's a very strong guard. I mean, a little shorter than me. Actually, I don't even know what he looks at. Maybe 6'1", but I feel like he's shorter than me, but he's really, really stocky. He just plays with a resilience. Even against the Grizzlies Friday night, the Knicks were down about 15 or so, and he had a strong drive at the end of the third quarter to bring the Knicks back to 12 points, maybe deficit. And then that fourth quarter, he had some big buckets, even though the Knicks lost. But he's showing that fight, and you need that really starting point guard to really rub off on all the guys. Raymond Felton, before the season, talked about getting to the best shape of his life last year in Portland. He admitted that he entered the season not in great shape. He said the lockout kind of affected me. I didn't really know when the season was going to start. So you can just tell, he's showing the same fight from the first quarter to the fourth quarter. He looks to be playing great. And obviously with Jason Kidd as his backcourt teammate, Jason Kidd helped also Raymond Felton understand how to run the point guard position better. Jason Kidd really helped everybody on the team, but I think Felton's really, learning a lot from Jason Kidd, and he's playing great.
Yeah, I mean, is it crazy to think he's a top 10 point guard in this league right now?
I mean, I don't always get into the top 10, top 15 personally. I mean, those numbers always kind of switch maybe once a week or so. I would definitely say so right now. He's definitely playing like maybe even a, yeah, I would say definitely playing like maybe a top
Yeah, I mean, I'm a diehard Knicks fan, so I know I can get a little bit biased. But when I see him, you know, driving and he goes full throttle and he uses his body really well to finish, and he just, you know, he knows how to feed the post. He shoots from the outside. It seems like he's got all the tools to be a top five guy.
No, absolutely. I think the biggest thing with Bellamy, obviously he has a pick and roll game down pat. I just want to see his 3-point shooting a little bit more consistent. I think, you know, you look at the top point guards in the league, like Chris Paul, Darren Williams, guys like that, you know, they're more consistent from outside. I like to see them become more of a lockdown 3-point shooter. And he's been working really hard on that with Dave Hopwell, the new shooting coach. So, you know, really all the guys have kind of benefited from Dave Hopwell. But, you know, the Knicks' 3-point shooting has been off a little bit. And I think it's because they've been playing some tough games against some very good defensive teams, like the Grizzlies. Obviously, there's the Spurs before that. So they might have some tired legs, but... you know, they're still playing great. They're still getting inside, getting to post presence from Carmelo and Rasheed Wallace, and they are hitting some outside shots. But I think that with them specifically, I think if you get that 3-point shot down, I mean, the rest of the game has been good. You don't have to score 20 points a game. You know, you have Dino Smith, you have Carmelo, you have good balance for. He doesn't need to be that kind of scorer. You know, and also Amari will come back soon, so obviously he doesn't have to really be a 20-point scorer, but I think if you could just, you know, Bell's impact to me has not all been in the box score. I think his impact to me has been just with his vocal leadership, his tenacity, you know, really getting after his guards on defense. So I think that sometimes when you watch a game, you know, if you're a diehard basketball fan, you watch the little things like that. Sometimes general fans look at the box score and see, oh, he only had 9 points, 7 assists. What does that mean? But if you really watch the game, you can see that Bellum is really, really just setting the tempo very early, and I think it's helping his team throughout the game.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I was just wondering, you know, since you mentioned the two guys that he was drafted with, Darren Williams and Chris Paul, I mean, do you think he has a sort of like a chip on his shoulder, like, I want to be as good as those guys, I want to be mentioned with those guys?
Yeah, probably. I think it's more related to last year in Portland when he came in out of shape and he had probably his worst year in the NBA. And I think it has to do with that. I think it has to do with now being back in New York under the brightest spotlight, you know, obviously with the Lakers and the Heat as far as the NBA goes, now running a team with championship potential. So I think he looks at more just, you know, personally, like, you know, him being out of shape to now being the guy. You know, everyone was talking about Jeremy Lin. But he's like, wait a second, I'm pretty good myself. Let me show it to you. So I think it's more in the realm of the situation now. I don't think he's looking at Paul and Williams. I mean, he probably realized that those guys are probably a notch above, but I don't think he's comparing himself to those guys. I think he's comparing himself to himself last season and also what he can do now that he's back in New York for the second time.
Well, I think he's making us forget Jeremy Lin. I mean, I've been keeping an eye on Lin's stats, but also I've watched a couple of games. I see a guy who's not even close to the player Raymond Felton is.
Well, keep in mind this, Buffy. I think we sometimes put a little too much pressure on guys right away. I mean, Lin played in his first starting position, you know, over 25 games. Felton's been in the league for, I think, 7 years. So, you know, there is more experience with Felton. And he already has experience in New York, so a full year under his belt. So the circumstances, I think, are more in the advantage of Felton. Lin has a lot of potential. I know Lin's trainer very well. I know a few people around Lin's camp and just talking to them. I've watched him kind of grow up, so to speak, from Harvard to, you know, the Warriors. I've talked to Steph Curry a lot. Steph Curry played with Jeremy Lin in Golden State. A lot of guys are very high on Lin, and I think that, you know, with more repetition, with more, playing as a starting point guard, and, you know, alongside James Harden, I think he's going to be a very good point guard. Maybe not because he's an all-star point guard. You might get voted in just because he's very popular around the world because of one's vanity. But I think he has potential to be a very solid point guard. I'm not going to doubt that. I just think that Paul has more experience. And I think that, previously playing in New York, he just knows where it takes to win.
But if you had three, I mean, if you look ahead, right, if you look ahead to the next 3 years, right, who would you take right now? I'm just saying, because, you know, all the Knicks fans, you know, we're pissed about the 3-year deal. You know, I just see Felton over the next 3 years being a really integral role, you know, in doing whatever we do.
No, I agree. And I think the good thing about Felton, too, is that, you know, he doesn't have to score too many points.
Yep.
He knows his role. Lynn, to me, is more of a scoring point guard. Like, he's a guy that, you know, goes out and gets out and runs more. I think, you know, now that he's in Houston, he's probably looking to score more. Obviously, they have a young team. Don't have a lot of veteran pieces. So that's probably one of the big things, is I think Felton really understands more of his role, and I think he plays within his game more. He knows if he can score 30 points a game if he has to. I really think he has the potential to do that, but I think he understands, like, where he's at. I think that's the great thing about the Knicks, right? You know, they're very deep, but everyone knows their role, and they're not competing with each other. See, there's no practice animosity, like, guys are trying to beat, you know, a guy up the rotation. You know, Michelson always says, you know, guys are going to play when I feel like they need to play. I'm not trying to favor any players. I'm not here to satisfy anybody's needs. I'm here to win games. And I think the players understand that, too. They're okay with, depending on when they play. Like, Marcus Camby really hasn't played that many minutes, but he's not mad. He's not, no locker room animosity with Camby. And
what about Kurt Thomas? Is he not upset about not playing right now?
No, he's not. And I was just going to say, with Camby, I asked Camby today about Rasheed Wallace. Camby's eyes lit up. He was so excited to talk about Rasheed's progression, being retired for 2 years. So I think all the guys are really coming to the situation, sacrificing minutes, and they're all out with the same focus. I think that's helped the team develop early chemistry.
Do you think a little bit of that has to do with the fact that they're 7-1? I mean, do you think, like, that dynamic changes a little if they're 4-4?
I think that it might be a little bit more soul-searching and wondering. But I think this team was destined to have a good winning record. You know, I think fans that thought maybe they might be 500 or worse than that, I don't think they would really put two and two together. You got some great talent on this team with some great veteran pieces that complement star players, not just offensively but also defensively. So, look. If there's any team that has a 500 or losing record, there's going to be more, guys wondering if they should play more. And that's natural. And I think at the same time, though, this early in the season, if a team is 4-4, you can't do that early. I think, it's still early in the season. You have to let guys kind of transition and develop a little bit. Yeah, that's why I was kind of surprised a little bit that the Lakers decided to fire their head coach so soon, even though Mike Brown may not be the best suited offensively for the team. It seemed like it was very rushed, and I thought that, you know, with a brand new team, basically, like 4 or 5, 6 new players, you know, the problem is that, you know, Los Angeles is in the top market, there's pressure to win right away, so I get it, it's a business, but I think that fans that expect things to happen, like, right away, especially with such a new team, like the Knicks, Lakers, for example. It takes some time, but fortunately the Knicks really benefited from a great offseason. They got together earlier. They started, like, the pre-training camp in early September, and I think, even though they had a rough preseason with some injuries, I think that their chemistry was already there, and I think that they really were getting after it very well. I think it's translated so far.
There's so many veterans. Who's the leader in that locker room? Is there one? I mean...
Obviously, Carmelo Anthony. Let's not get around that. It's obviously Carmelo as far as everything that he brings to the court. But I would say, as far as like a locker room presence, you know, in practice as well, most guys, quite a few guys, Jason Kidd and Rasheed Wallace. Jason Kidd and Rasheed are very vocal. They're always pulling the guys aside, do this. I think that, you can work on this. They're very supportive. They've obviously both been to the finals. Rasheed won one with Detroit in 2004. Jason Kidd did the two of them with Kent in New Jersey. So they've been to the biggest stage. So from what I hear, talking to guys, usually Rasheed and Jason Kidd both come up as far as the vocal leadership, communicating on defense, things like that.
Were you, what was Rasheed trash talking at the Grizzlies game? Do you hear what he was saying? You know what he was, what was he saying over there to that bench?
I actually wrote this in my story with the post, how he's bringing more of a post presence to the Knicks. And he was saying that one of the reasons why he wanted to come out of retirement was to prove to all these young players that who can't really post, you know, that I can do it. I can show you up a little bit. So that's receiving for him. You know, he's probably one of the top 30 to 40 power forwards of all time. You know, I mean, he's having like a 25, 30 foot tour, but he can do everything on the court. It's amazing what he's been doing so far. You know, out of the league 2 years and climbing the charts very well on the depth chart and playing the post. Shooting the three pretty well, playing even good defense like we saw tonight against Hibbert and those guys. So, you know, Rasheed's going to trash a lot of dogs. I'm talking a lot of trash, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I can you find out what kind of trash he's talking? I'd love to hear, you know, that's what we never hear what these guys are saying. I wish they had them more mic'd up. I feel like the fans don't get treated to the good trash talk.
Well, that's a great idea. I would love to see Rasheed mic'd up, but I don't know if that'd be so suitable for the general TV audiences out there. But, you know, that trash talking, no one talks about it, but really, that trash talking is another advantage when you have Rasheed on the court because he's really getting under the skin of a lot of these young players out there. So that intensity, that intimidation factor is definitely always helpful.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, I mean, do you think we're taking too many threes at this point? I mean, the numbers are going down. I talked to your buddy Ian Bagley last week, and he said if the numbers go down, Mike Woodson's going to have to come up with a little bit of tweak the game plan. I mean, today they were 7 for 25 or something.
The Knicks are definitely getting some good open looks. I mean, if you look at the way they're playing.
Right. But at some point, I mean, if you're not hitting the open looks, right, is that just, okay, just to chalk it up to a bad game? Or do you have to be like, all right, we're shooting too many threes?
Well, you have to find the right balance. And I think the Knicks start off hot shooting the three. And they're going to have to find the right balance. Unfortunately, you know, Amari is not back yet. And the Knicks don't have an amazing inside presence, really. I mean, defensively, they have some good pieces with Tyson and Marcus, but, you know, they don't have, like, necessarily guys that can always post up and get inside buckets. Like, you look at, you know, the Grizzlies, for example, they got Zach Randolph and Marcus Gasol, two great post players. Even Paul George, Danny Green, you know, guys like that. So, you know, the Knicks, it's a challenge, I think, to find the right balance. But I think that the Knicks just have to find more of an attack, really. To get inside, or I think the Raymond Felton, J.R. Smith, guys like that, they have to complement Carmelo getting into the lane and finishing and then dishing out. I think you know, they've been doing somewhat of a good job of that at times, but it's got to be more consistent. And unfortunately, I think Rasheed developing as a more of a post presence, I think now it actually helps the Knicks. In fact, I asked Carmelo after the game today, and I asked him about that. He said, you know, it's actually great to have Rasheed now in the post. He's actually the second post option outside Carmelo. And the reason why Rasheed's great to have is that if the ball gets a little stagnant, they can go inside of Rasheed, and he's proved the last two games that he can score inside.
I would rather him be inside. I mean, I just think he's a little bit in love with the three, like most 38-year-old guys who, you know, like they like to sit on that three-point line sometimes.
Well, he's been getting inside more. He's scored more of his buckets in the last two games. Inside, so that's good because the Knicks need more of that. You know, Tyson Chandler doesn't really post really.
Yeah.
You know, Amari, if he comes back healthy and looks good, maybe he'll have some post moves. So they have some potential, but you know, it's just, you know, look, at the end of the day, it's all about the match. It's all about the defensive matchup. You got to expose what's there.
Yeah.
I think the Knicks have been doing a great job controlling the tempo, but some games are different. Like today, we saw more of a grind out style game where every possession the ball was shot at like 5 seconds still in the shot clock. You know, it was a low scoring game. You know, it wasn't like a come down the court, get up the shot quickly, which they were doing a little bit last week and even before that in the first week of the season. It was more of a grind out style and they got some more inside buckets.
So, I mean, do you think our style changes from game to game, or do we have a definite, you know, sort of style?
I think one thing you'll probably always see is ball movement, and initially if you're trying to get some open shots, because I think having Raymond Felton and Jason Kidd on the court, you're going to see the pick and roll as a staple, obviously with Carmelo in the post or mid post, but you're going to see the pick and roll as a staple, try to get guys open shots. That's going to be, I think, what they're going to really, that's going to be their bread and butter. And from there, I think you're just going to see variations. You know, I think Mike Woodson, I think, has been an underrated offensive coach this year. Everyone talks about how he's a defensive-minded coach, but he's done a great job cleverly instituting some new offensive plays. He actually admitted a couple days ago that he's using a lot of Mike D'Antoni's offensive schemes, you know, and he's seeing it pick and roll, spaced out a bit, have kind of a sort of inside score, which is Jim Carmelo. So, and I think also, too, the great thing about the Knicks is that every player on the team can play about two or three or four positions even. Either to the defense. Like, even J.R. Smith can post. Jason Kidd can post against the ball guard. Rasheed Wallace can pick and pop or go in the post. Same with Carmelo. So, Mike Gibson has a bittersweet position because, he has a lot to work with. But at the end of the day, he does have to find that balance and that consistency. So, fortunately, it's been working for the most part. And I think the biggest reason why they've been winning games, let's face it, is the defense. Even though they've been having some struggling shooting nights, like today against the Pacers, fought out against the Grizzlies, defense has been really winning the game for us. There's no question about it. And I think that's got to be the staple for this team. You know, they may not score 100 points a game. I think when Amari comes back, they have the potential to do that. But this team is going to win games on defense, no question about it.
Have you checked in with Amari? Do you check in on that guy? I mean, what's the latest?
Well, I talked to the Knicks today. Amari has been traveling with the team. He followed the doctor's orders. The woman named Dr. Lisa Callahan, who has worked with Amari on his knee. I talked to Amari's training advisor the other day, and he said Amari, is looking good. He didn't give me a timetable. I think there is a bit of a secrecy, or whatever you want to call it, sort of, doctor protocol, what we really know and what stage he's at. So we'll find out too. I mean, I expect some good news soon, and I expect him it's back at some point in mid-December. As far as Amon Shumpert, I asked him today, he said he's feeling great. He's starting to really cut and do some things, and I don't see him returning before Amari, obviously, but I would say Shumpert might be in January as well. Keep in mind that when Amon Shumpert returns, even Amari, they're not going to be immediately impact players. You have to give them some time and adjust to games. No matter how much a guy practices or how much a guy develops muscle, whatever you call it, there's no preparation like actually playing an NBA game. So, even if Amon Shumpert returns in, like, let's say early, mid-January, he really won't be back to form for maybe a few months after that. So, or even, who knows, even until next season. So, hopefully those guys come back and provide maybe 10, 15 minutes, maybe a game, and provide an impact on both ends.
Where's Amari's head, though, at in terms of, obviously he's got to hear the chatter about everyone wanting him to come off the bench. I mean, do you agree with that? What do you think he is feeling?
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, I think, first of all, I think Amari could find his place in the starting five. I think now with Raymond Sellin, basically, he's never had two great point guards like that. I think that Amari will find his groove to pick and roll all the time. I also think that you can still have Tyson Chandler as the main pick and roller, and you can have Amari as the off-the-ball shooter, like a mid-range shooter, which with Kurt Thomas and Rashid have kind of been proving to be effective. They're getting open shots off the Chandler pick and roll and off the ball movement. And Amari is one of the best mid-range shooters in the game. So you don't have to work him off curls. You don't have to work him too much. He can be an off-the-ball, shooter in the offense. Maybe you can push him up a little bit. I think Thomas Kidd will be on the court between Melo and Amari. And I think defensively is really where Amari has to prove himself. He's never been a great defender.
He's a disaster as a defender.
Yeah, and then that's where, people talk about the offense. The biggest concern is defensively. And as far as your question, if he's going to start from off the bench, I personally believe that he's going to start, not just because, he's still a very solid player. I think that Amari's mindset, he's just turned 30 years old. He still believes that he's a franchise player for this team, taking, $18 million. Amari changed the landscape, really, of the Knicks. He was the first superstar, not maybe superstar, but the star to come to New York. And then Tyson Chandler followed, and Carmelo.
Yeah, but, I mean, does that entitle him to start?
Well, I think in some ways it's part of the Garden experience, right? Like, let's say you're a fan, you go to the game. The starting introductions for players, Amari, that it doesn't feel right. It probably wouldn't feel right for Amari to be and Madison Square Garden where he can set a new tempo for this team, not be included in the starting five through the player introductions that they do on the Jumbotron. I just feel like he's not ready yet in his career to be labeled as a bench player. I just feel like he still wants to show that he is a legit starter. I truly believe that, and I think Mike Woods is going to get the chance to prove that he's still a dominant power forward, and we'll see what happens. You know, Mike Woods is the kind of coach, man, that if it's not working, he's going to go to what's working. You know,
So he would bench Amari if it wasn't working.
He would bench him. He would bring him off the bench. And Amari could flourish in that role. So, you know, also keep in mind this, too. When Amari played well years ago in New York, he was a starting center. He was exposing forward mismatches. When he moved to the power forward last year, he had a guard, some quicker power forward, and also he had to go, he had to drive by quicker power forward. So maybe Mike Woods could get traded and use his Amari maybe as a backup center. To allow him to expose the mismatches. I mean, I think, like I said, Winston's going to start him. I think, give him a chance. Amari's going to open up practice, how he's feeling. And then I think, if it's working, if it's not, I don't think Mike Woods is going to be afraid to do what he has to do, especially if the team is rolling.
Well, let's hope. I want to ask you something about these players personally, you know, because Jarrett Smith said he, you know, is not going out a lot. Like, which of these guys are the guys that go out on the town? Is it like Melo? And I just picture Melo and J.R. Smith being out all the time for some reason.
Well, I don't want to speculate, man. That's a tough question. I mean, I think when you're just a professional athlete or celebrity in general, you're going out. It's part of the world of being a celebrity. You know?
Yeah.
You're dating the hot girls and you're having fun. I mean, I think that, Chris Copeland told me today that, on the road trip that they went on, they were all pretty focused on the task at hand. They weren't really enjoying themselves. So I think this Knicks team is really going to kind of be under that. I think the Knicks team is just Knicks team. You won't see them in the news for anything.
So this Knicks team isn't going to be destroyed by crazy groupies or anything?
I don't think so. I think this team is pretty locked in right now. Obviously, you gotta enjoy yourself, right?
I agree. I mean, that's why you come to New York. Now, I mean, make a prediction here. Where are we going this year? I my eyes are getting really big.
Well, I mean, look, I think the Miami Heat are still the team to beat. You got the best player in the world in LeBron James. I think a big thing to watch the Heat is Dwayne Wade. He's been backing stuff a little bit to start the season. He's a nice player that takes a lot of talent. You look at what he wears to the braces and all this Under Armour stuff. He takes the beating. He falls a lot. And, it'll be interesting to see how if he changes his game maybe a little bit, maybe works out of the post more, things like that. So I think Wade is really the big question out there.
Thanks, Jared, for doing the podcast. That was really informative. Offline, he told me a story about doing an interview with Justin Bieber today. He's got a lot of other hustles going on. A Miami guy who's also a part-time closet Heat fan, but he's doing a great job with the Knicks. Really great work that he does, and really great story he told me offline about Steve Novak hitting 96 out of 100 three-pointers in a tryout for the Spurs. Just tells you what kind of shooter that guy is, but that was really great. And now we're going to talk to Jeff Cerulli. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of West Coast Knicks Fan. With me, as always, my East Coast representative, Jeff Cerulli. Interesting week for our Knicks. Really, really starting to see what this team is, I think.
We're going to see what they're made of. You got two really tough games on the road against the Spurs and the Grizzlies. And, you're looking at it, you're like, if they come out of there one of two, it'd be good. I didn't even see a way that 1-2 wouldn't have been good. And that Spurs victory was probably the best victory of the year because the way they did it, that they were down by so much and they fought and they didn't give up being down 12.
I submit it's the best victory in, 5-10 years.
Yeah, that was a big win. I mean, to come back. I mean, I texted you when I was like, you watching this?
Yeah.
But when I texted you, it was – they weren't even close to coming back. It was a little before the 12 minutes. They were looking so slow, so sluggish. And I was like, geez, I don't know, man. This team, just when they don't hit their threes. And the big thing, one of my friends is getting on me, is Chandler not rebounding that well so far.
Well, I think that has to do with he's got to do a lot defensively. Yeah. I think that puts him out of position a lot of times, and then there's just not another guy.
That's what I was going to say. Now, he always says, well, he doesn't rebound a lot, but I said, well, he does when he doubles up on the shooting guard and he plays up. He covers so much ground. He's like a free safety out there. He's not going to have a ton of interceptions, per se, rebounds, but he does so much that he's the only guy there.
I'd be willing to bet your friend that he has over 10 rebounds a game by the end of the year.
Hopefully.
I mean, even if he doesn't, look, so far they're the lowest rebounding team in the league, or one of them. So I don't know how much of a problem that is.
Depends if you're hitting the threes like that. And then, of course, the next night you got to play the Grizzlies, which was tough. I mean, the Grizzlies are a really good team, playing really well. They got two big bodies. And they held it together for three quarters, and then just kind of with those – what do you think of those technicals?
You know, I think at the end of the day, you got to keep your cool.
Yeah.
And we can't be the team that loses their cool and then blames it on that. We're veteran. Yeah. Veteran teams are not supposed to do that.
I agree with you, but it was a little out of hand, wasn't it, with all the technicals?
I think in general we're getting a little bit – the refs are just sort of a little hard on us this year.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it stems from Melo not getting the calls that he deserves as a superstar, and it sort of works its way down from there.
Well, everyone went to see Joey Crawford yesterday. Oh, no, I mean, they didn't. But, of course, he makes it about him giving a T 90 seconds into the game.
I'd like to see that guy as a character actor in movies when his career is done.
I agree. That'd be good for him.
I'd like to see him as part of like a mafia, like a Boston mafia crew.
Sure.
Like a Departed type, you know, like, you know, one of those guys sitting in the bar with DiCaprio.
Yeah.
I could see that, you know, like them trying to figure out who the mole is. They know it's obviously not Joey Crawford.
Well, as long as Tim Duncan's not in it, I think he'll be fine. Or you put Duncan in it to rile him up.
That's right. That's a weird beef, huh?
It's really weird. You kicked him out of a game for laughing on the bench. Yeah, they have a weird history.
Maybe there's a side of Tim Duncan that we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Part of me thinks Tim Duncan's, like, secretly a dick or something.
Yeah, because he's one of those people that seems so nice and polished on the surface. There's always more to it.
Yeah, like Derek Jeter, when we found out that he's a real creep, you know, that wasn't a big surprise.
With the girls, when he would send them...
Yeah, when he accidentally keeps handing the same girl the same bat.
So good.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going for the set here, Jeter.
Yeah, it's it was good wins. It was good wins versus Spurs. And the thing I like about it, and I'm not upset they lost to the Grizzlies, nor is any fan, because Grizzlies are tough out at home. And you split with the Spurs and the Grizzlies. The Pacer game was good yesterday, and I like that they're taking care of business. They're not just beating these teams. Like, the Magic game was a little tight, but they eventually pulled away. They're beating them. They beat the Sixers. They beat the Heat at home. They're beating. The Pacer game was an awful game to watch for 80% of it. Both teams were terrible in that second and third quarter, but Knicks pulled away, man.
I like when I look at a schedule and I check off like automatic wins, and they're not disappointing.
Dangerous.
You know what I mean?
It's dangerous. Don't do it.
I know, but I've been doing it. I mean, I look ahead at the schedule and I'm starting to, you know, put a check mark next to a lot of games on the schedule. that win tally is climbing, you know.
Do that. I do it too, but it's a huge mistake.
Of course it is. I mean, we definitely have a bunch of trap games coming up. I also like winning ugly. You know, that's a mark of a winner. Anytime you're shooting 50% from 3-point land, you're going to win. But when you're shooting 28% from 3-point land and you still win, says a lot to me that, you know, Knicks really got it locked in, like you said, at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, because you know they're not going to fall all the time. You know those threes are not going to fall all the time, so it's nice to get those grinded out wins. And I think that's going to give them so much confidence. I know the Spurs lost tonight to the Clippers, who are playing really well. But, yeah, that's just a great win. That's a tough place to win at home. I mean, that is a great win.
Yeah, Jared Swirling had an interesting point. You know, I said, I don't like that they're in love with the threes. He said, well, they don't really have a whole lot of options right now without Amari. I mean, we don't really have a lot of post-up players. You know, now Sheed's starting to post up, which is nice, but we don't really have a lot of that.
Yeah, you're getting more out of Sheed than I thought you would, because he's really smart. I think he's rebounding really well. Like, Hansborough is pretty good rebounder. He's pretty tenacious, you know, and he was keeping healthy glass. And I thought he did a great job rebounding in yesterday's game versus the Pacers. He's doing good things. He takes those threes, those quick threes that you're like, come on, settle down. But he's like a really nice surprise. I got to admit, I was a little wrong about him. And I know you still probably don't love him because you didn't like him either.
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting to turn around. You know, it's at some point I got to just admit that he's bringing a lot to the table. He's not taking away too much. I also have to say I love the shit-talking. Zwirling said that him and Shumpert are the two biggest shit-talkers on the team.
Oh, Shumpert is definitely up there. Shumpert's fun.
Yeah.
I'm excited for him to come back more than Amari. I just, I mean, you know, Kidd is still like a little slow on defense, even though he's playing really well. Shumpert's going to be that guy. If, like, we go against a tough point guard, you can stick him on it, you know, and he can lock him down.
Listen, if he's got the lateral quickness, right? I mean, you come off these knee surgeries, you see a lot
of
these guys.
Adrian Peterson.
You see a lot of these guys, it takes 2 years, you know, to get back. You know, it takes a full
Adrian
year.
Peterson, though. That's, I mean, not that he's as good as him in football and basketball, but.
Oh, come on. Adrian, yeah, but Adrian Peterson. No, no, no. Adrian Peterson is a physical specimen to a different degree. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't think it's a good comparison.
Yeah, not a good comparison, but it's kind of a sign of the times of the medicine and the technology and the science today. And I'll throw a bunch of words at you that are vague of what guys can come back from that would have, you know, been kind of debilitating a few years ago. Imagine Bernard King had injury now without the drugs. I think he would.
If Bernard King did come back, it was
like a big deal, and it was like a little later.
If Bernard King had a hyperbaric chamber, man, if only.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know. I tend to think guys like Bernard King, man, if there was Twitter, if there were groupies that he could hook up with on Twitter, I don't know. It might have been more of a disaster. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
These guys were partying like crazy without being able to, like, connect with people on cell phones and Twitter and all that stuff.
It works for it.
You know? Yeah. What do you think about J.R. Smith, man? He's still, like, just proving me even more and more wrong every day.
Well, he still has moments that he can't help but be himself. Like in that Pacer game yesterday, there was one point where he like just dribbled up and down the court and like around and just took a terrible shot. And you're like, yep, that's J.R. Smith. And he can't help do that. And he did that maybe one or two times in the game, you're just going to have to live with.
I think we agreed we allow him one to two of those a game, right? Two is too many. Two is too many. One is just about his sweet spot. Zero would be disappointing.
Yeah, because he's hitting that fadeaway that I was giving him shit about that he never hits, and he plays good defense. He does. He plays good defense. He hustles, gets a steal or two, and it's just about keeping him in control with that shot. And you're like, Walt had a good one. I forget who it was in the Pacers. I think it might have been Stevenson, and J.R. Smith was guarding him. Did you hear it? And he took like this. He just started dribbling like crazy and took like a stupid shot. And Frazier goes, "Oh, it's like JR was just guarding himself." And
That's awesome. Funny. That's really awesome. Yeah. I like, you know, as much as people like to hate on Frazier, he gets on them pretty good.
He's a genius. I mean, he was a great point guard. Knows what he's talking about. He's just absolutely absurd with the way he talks and the way he calls the game.
Did you ever see that article from the 1970s? It was about him and Bill Bradley and Willis Reed. It was really interesting. On the bus, a photographer caught them. He was reading through a book of synonyms. And Bill Bradley was reading a political book, and Willis Reed was like reading a book about coaching.
I feel like Frazier probably at some point years ago was like, I'm going to up my vocabulary, and just did it the wrong way by just I'm going to just take a bunch of big words and.
I gotta be honest. I gotta give him a little credit. I feel like nobody tries to improve their vocabulary after a certain age.
I'll give you that. Yeah, you just are what you are at that point.
Yeah, like, I mean, he at least was like, listen, I'm gonna become a totally different person.
But you gotta admit, the Pacers are filled with precocious neophytes. I mean, he is right on about that.
is that how he referred to that? Indubitably, he was gonna use the word neophyte.
Pacers are precocious neophytes. How about Lance Stevenson's homecoming, like shooting 2 of 50? You know that guy was he's like a huge scumbag, right? Lance Stevenson, threw his friend down the stairs.
Let me ask you this. You know, you mentioned J.R. Smith's step back. I was looking at his Twitter page, apparently his fans, at least, are in love with his step back. They think he's got the best step back jumper in the league.
Do they?
Yeah.
I feel like he never hits it. I feel like he hit a few in the past few games, but like, well, he's money. When he spots up, he gets an open jumper. Great, great form. Really great shooter. But when he does that dribble, step back, I guess in a way keep defense honest because he can cut to the hoop, but I just feel like he was never hitting those, and he would always do it. So for these people on Twitter to tell him that, that's kind of absurd.
Yeah, can we get our intern to run the numbers on J.R. Smith's step-back jumper versus, like, feet set?
Although, if you want to talk about – well, yeah, because I'm telling you, from my eye, watching it, he wasn't hitting any of them, and now he's hitting a little. So it went from none to a little. But it was one of those things that was like, that's not going in, and it wouldn't. But if you want to talk about big Twitter news with the Knicks, how about me getting Raymond Felton verified this week?
I mean, that was pretty incredible. To our listeners out there, what happened basically was Jeff tweeted to Raymond Felton. Is that how – that was the sequence of it, right? You tweeted to Raymond Felton. What did you tweet him?
I saw that Alan Hahn, who covers the Knicks, who does a very good job on MSG, I like Alan Hahn.
Yeah, we should get Alan Hahn on the podcast.
And I'd love to talk to him about it. Alan Hahn was verified, but Raymond Felton wasn't. So I tweeted at him, I go, at Raymond Felton, how is Raymond Felton not verified, but Alan Hahn is? And then Felton retweeted that with the at verified Twitter, like, what's up with that? And then by like lunch, I go, he's going to be verified, and he was later in that day. So thank you. You can thank me, Raymond Felton.
So I think we should also get Felton on the podcast because, I mean, he at least owes you that much.
Yeah, West Coast Knicks got you verified.
What is the process to get verified anyway? Because I know that you've tried multiple times and been rejected. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I try every day.
Yeah, me too. Unsuccessfully. But Raymond Felton just shoots one tweet out there. Can I be verified? And then they just do it.
Yeah, I think they saw his game the other night. And
I would have verified him too.
No. I mean, for all the fat jokes, for everything, I mean, he's putting it up, and it's clearly, it's here to stay. This is not a Jeremy Lin sort of, what you can say, fluke-like thing. The guy's done it before. He's just, he's playing really well. I mean, like, I trust him as my point guard.
I rank him as the ninth best point guard in the NBA.
Did you? Because, yeah, I was looking at the rankings, too, and I had him 10th.
Okay, let's do it right now. So we'll put Derrick Rose, Williams.
Where can you put Rose because he's not playing?
I mean, come on, you still got to put him top five.
He's not playing right now.
Fine,
I agree.
Fine. Even if you wanted to take him out, you've got Deron Williams, Chris Paul, Rondo,
Westbrook.
Those are the four that are in another category, right?
Or Parker.
Parker's in that category too. So that's your five, 100%. You could never make an argument for Raymond Felton being better than any of those five. I would have put Derrick Rose in there too if he's healthy. He's obviously better than Raymond Felton, so that's six right there.
Deron Williams.
Did I say Deron Williams?
I don't know. Also, you'd put Kyrie Irving there too.
Kyrie Irving is definitely better than Raymond Felton, absolutely.
And also Jrue Holiday, I would put.
Yeah, I guess.
Holiday's pretty nasty, dude.
No, listen.
This is
we both
against Felton. Where I mean, we're talking about the top.
Yeah.
Top.
No, we both like him. I guess you're right. I mean, is it too early? We both love Jrue Holiday, but is it too? Oh, what about Steve Nash?
I'd rather have Felton at this point. I think Nash is really kind of, you know, obviously old and banged up at this point. If I could start, I mean, it's kind of like, what are you doing, body work, starting a franchise? If you're starting a franchise, like, there's no way you take Nash.
No, I'm just talking about at this point in time for right now.
I take Felton. I like the way Felton's playing. Felton's hitting the jumper pretty consistently. He's getting everyone involved.
He also doesn't have a broken leg.
Yeah, there's no way I take Steve Nash over Felton. I mean, and to be honest, this summer when the Knicks were flirting with Nash, I didn't love it. I was like, you know, he's kind of old at this point. Like, get it, like with Amari, you're trying to get some magic back. But I don't know. I was for keeping Len over Nash, to be honest.
What about
That's it. That's my list, man.
That's your whole. What if I throw a couple names at you?
I don't put Ty Lawson above him.
Ty Lawson would be my first name that I would have thrown at you.
I don't put Ty Lawson above him.
Darren Collison?
Ty Lawson, not that anyone's above that game. Raymond Felton's going to have a shit game, but Ty Lawson the other night was like 0 for 9, like a bunch of turnovers. I wouldn't take Ty Lawson. I think Ty Lawson's a very good point guard. Well, who's the next one?
Darren Collison.
No, I like Felton better.
Okay, what about John Wall?
Like Felton. I don't really like Wall. What does Wall do good besides he's really fast and he can run a break?
I think he's a locker room cancer if you want that. If you want something like that.
I don't think he shoots particularly well. I mean, you know what? That's not a professional basketball team, the Wizards.
No, they're not. That's like a weird, like traveling, like D-League team.
That's like eight guys. You pick above him.
All right, well, hold on. Let's look around the league before we make that determination that he's in the top 10 for sure. You know, I don't know if I'm ready to definitely.
I had him ranked 10 before.
What about Goran Dragic?
No, I like Felton more. And I like that guy, too. I mean, it's a point guard league, man. It's not.
I got one that you'd be hard pressed to say that Felton's better than, especially with the way they're playing this year. Brandon Jennings.
Oh, you know what? I like Jennings, but I think he's a little more selfish than Felton, so I'm going to be biased. I'm going to take Felton, but I do like Jennings. I think Jennings is a...
I think it would be pretty hard to get, you know, people to agree with
younger,
you.
Younger, though. If you're talking about younger, yeah, you probably
think. I think that's a bit of a homer pick to say that Felton is better than Brandon Jennings. I can't subscribe to that. I really can't. But, I mean, look, he's obviously getting, you know, he's getting up there. That's where we want. That's all where you need him to be, considering our lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it again right now. And Rubio, he's like, and Lillard is real good too. You would probably take him, even though he's so young. Damian Lillard.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't take him yet. I mean, he hasn't proven himself yet.
No.
Rubio hasn't proven himself to be better than Felton yet either.
No, Lillard's just young. It's a lot of potential.
What do you think about this upcoming week for the Knicks? What do you like?
All right, so I got seven guys ranked.
You got seven.
All Westbrook, Irving, Rondo, Holiday, Williams, and Jennings. You might have swayed me.
Yeah, Jennings is pretty good. I mean, he's just having a good year. He's playing well. How about you know, there's a couple of others too. If we really want to get into it, I'm already starting to rethink it. I mean, Steph Curry.
No, I take Felton.
What? Really?
Yeah, Steph Curry's always hurt, and I feel like
you realize what he makes.
And is he really a point guard? He's a great shooter, but I think Felton serves the purpose more as point guard on this team.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying you realize pure value. I mean, you know, Steph Curry probably gets paid three times as much as Felton. Not that that's an indicator of everything, but.
Dude, I'm telling you, man. I take Felton before Curry.
Well, maybe four of these Knicks, but I mean,
Kyle Lowry.
I like Kyle. Look, maybe what we're realizing is there's a lot of good point guards in the NBA.
Yeah, just don't take Steph Curry over Felton. I'm talking about as a point guard. Curry might be a better overall player. Obviously, he's a great shooter, but I think you know. And Conley, I take Felton over Conley. I think they're
very, very comparable. Very comparable players.
But Parker, you take too.
Yeah, look, I think the bottom line is maybe we shouldn't rank Felton at all.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I got eight guys. That's it. That's as low as I'm going. I got him ninth now.
I got to keep us credible and say that he's top 12.
Yeah, but he's playing top 10 now. Hey, as far as the week, what you mentioned, I mean, this is a big week just because of the game on Friday. I think they win tomorrow. I think they take care of business. I don't see any way they lose to the Hornets.
You know, it's three road games in a row this week. And so if they're going to lose one, let's hope it's the back-to-back against Dallas.
So, yeah, the bounce back against Dallas, that's an interesting one because of revenge. Dallas is kind of – they've kind of been on a little bit of a losing streak since when we played them last. They were 4-1. I think they're like 4-6 or something. I'm going to check it out right now. They are – 6-6.
Yeah, they're 6-6. But you know what? They also played us really hard. They played real, you know, it was a tough game.
Yeah, I gotta be honest, is it crazy if I like the Knicks in all three of these games?
Well, it's only crazy because then you're going to like them in the next three also. So then we're talking about favoring them in six games in a row.
Well, here's the thing. The Dallas, the day before Thanksgiving, that's a big game, and you're in Dallas. I don't know. You can say the revenge factor, you can say the bounce back, but the big one, and I wish this game was at MSG, is Friday. Houston Rockets, Jeremy Lin, they're going to come out to play. You don't think Felton's going to be motivated to show everyone how much we don't need Lin? That's going to be that's a big game, man.
I see 25-8 from Felton, and I see 9 points, 6 assists, and 6 turnovers from Jeremy Lin.
Hope so. Lin didn't have a good game tonight either. Here's the funniest thing I read. So I was curious, Matt. So the Rockets lost again tonight. They're 4-7. They lost 3 in a row. Lin had like 10 points, 4 assists tonight. Like he's just they're just very average stats. Okay, so I went on a Rockets blog. I was very curious, like, what are Rockets fans saying about Jeremy Lin? You know, are they giving them the benefit of the doubt? Are they saying it's early? Are they pissed? So the best one I read was, I'm gonna paraphrase it here. In the comments section, a guy goes, you know, Jeremy Lin's not going to shoot a lot. He doesn't want to do, and he put in quotes, Lin's sanity anymore. That's why he's not going to shoot. That's why he chose to come down to Houston to have a calmer life, and he doesn't want to do that Lin's sanity stuff. And he was just making excuses for basically why his play's been subpar, because he doesn't want to be Lin's sanity. And I'm like, man, I thought Knicks fans were delusional. It's like, yeah, he's not playing well because he doesn't want to be Lin's sanity. Please, man. Lin's sanity made him a multimillionaire, you know? He took shots in New York. He took plenty of shots. It's not like he didn't like it. He liked it.
I love
it.
That. I love
that. Got to get off in Houston.
I love that whole concept. It's like, oh, yeah, no. He moved to Houston to take a $15 million a year gig to just disappear into the limelight.
Yeah, just I mean, disappear. I think he went there because it was his team. Because it could be. And imagine if James Harden wasn't there. What would they have, 1 win? They're 4-7 right now. If they didn't have Harden and it was Lin and Kevin Martin and Asik, would they even have 2 wins?
I mean, probably not. I think what we're learning is that we've basically passed off Jeremy Lin, and we got a huge upgrade at point guard, and maybe Lin will end up being okay, but we were clearly, you know, look, all of us were very upset when Lin left. We're all over it. I think I'm just going to stop thinking about Jeremy Lin at some point.
Yeah, but you're going to be excited for the game, though.
Listen, I know that Felton has a huge chip on his shoulder, so I really want to see how that plays out.
I'm juiced for this game, more so than any other game this week. That's the game. If they had to lose the other two, and if you remember last year when they played the Nuggets, they lost in overtime, which was a shit game. Danilo had like 35.
Yeah, I remember that game very well. Danilo wanted to prove something to Melo.
Has Melo been back to Denver? No, right?
I don't think so.
Because he got traded, we already played there, and last year they didn't go there. So he hasn't been – when is he going to Denver? He's going to get booed, obviously, there. But Danilo, yeah, I wanted to prove something. They came to the Garden, and, he put up 30-something, and they lost. And this is a little different. Linsanity was like a thing. It's a big win. It's a big win for them. They got to get it. They got to get that one.
Who does the primary job of guarding Harden? Is it Ronnie Brewer? Is it J.R. Smith? Is it?
Yeah, I think Ronnie Brewer, J.R. Smith. When are they going to Denver? That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah, I think that's later on in the year. Well, look, man. I think we should wrap it up because we got Thanksgiving coming up. Everybody should enjoy it with their families.
Denver, March 13th, by the way. So in March.
Maybe we'll have to go to that one because we didn't end up going to this Indiana.
In Denver,
game.
We go to that one.
Look, I see 6 games ahead of us on the schedule that are all winnable. I think in 2 weeks we're gonna be. I don't know. Who knows? 13-3, maybe. It's getting to be ridiculous.
You have the Nets and the Bucks and the Wizards and the Suns and the Bobcats.
And Detroit on the schedule too.
And Detroit, yeah.
I mean, it could be a 15-win month, which is pretty crazy.
Well, you gotta stay motivated, you know.
No, listen, but these wins need to pile up, you know, because we want to be able to face Miami. The whole season comes down to waiting Miami out to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, absolutely. You want to get that 1 or 2 seed.
That's it. That's what this whole season is about at this point. And hope that this Dwayne Wade is injured, maybe. I don't know.
We hope so.
Would you be happy if the Knicks backdoored their way into the finals, if Wade got hurt somehow and they...
Yeah, who cares about that? You can't worry about that. We played them last year with, like, our guys hurt.
So you wouldn't feel sort of cheated by having to beat the best?
Not in the least.
You don't feel the I have to beat the best thing?
No, you just got to get in, man. It's one thing if it was Jordan out, if they won it in 93, but they didn't, so.
Actually, you know, now that I think about it, I wasn't even upset they didn't beat Jordan. I would have been very, my childhood would have been much happier if they won that series in 94.
Yeah, 94, you're right. Said 93.
Well, 93, I mean, they should have beat you. Charles Smith, where is that guy? Oh, I wonder if people still give him a hard time and like spit on him when he walks down the street.
I don't think they spit on him. Wow, you have I like your world, your mentality of Melo and Mari that he's carrying his love, that he still treats him like a rookie and people spit on Charles Smith.
You don't think anyone spits towards Charles Smith?
I don't think they spit on him. I think people does.
Maybe people are over it.
Maybe Joe Benando.
Maybe I should get over it.
Yeah. But, yeah, so Thanksgiving, you're coming over, right?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
All right, man.
All right, well, listen, I think that wraps it up for this week. I think we're both just unabashedly predicting that the Knicks are not losing this week.
No, and, you know, two seed would be nice. I mean, before the season, I had the 52 wins, but I had them more of like a four seed, I mean, which is still – obviously very much in play because the Atlantic is very tight right now. As much as they're 7-1, there's a bunch of other teams with 5 and 6 wins. So, you know, they're not running away from anyone. They still have a while to go.
Hey, before we go, is there anything you want to promote while we're here?
I'd like to promote a big show at Clyde Fraser's Wine and Dine. The big show. I would like to go to Clyde Fraser's Wine and Dine with you.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's do it. Let's set that up. But let's get Clyde on the podcast, too.
Yeah. Why aren't we getting Clyde? Let's go to the restaurant. Let's get him on the podcast.
Do you think we could just show up at the restaurant with my computer?
Yeah. I think you'd be into it.
All right. Let's do it, man. I'm into it.
All right, man.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
See ya.